I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry one of those cops. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. This is episode number 320, to be exact. This week, I got some pretty cool interviews for you to listen to. But I have some miscellaneous subjects that I want to talk about regarding concealed carry, open carry, things like that, and a couple of guns that I want to discuss. Let's get started with that. I want to discuss the H&K VP9. Now, I'm not one of these gun experts. I'm not one of these gun writers and these gun reviewers and these experts and things like that. You know, most of you know I'm just an everyday guy. But I get a lot of people that come through the classes that I'm associated with. And recently, when we were up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, teaming up with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast, had an interesting thing happen at class, an interesting gun that I got a chance to shoot, and that was the H&K VP9. Now, there were actually two students there that were using H&K VP9s, and I've seen a lot about this gun. One of the things, I got a chance to shoot one student's VP9. Matt, I know you're listening. Thank you very much for letting me borrow your gun and shoot it a little bit. I really like it. It seems pretty similar to a Walther PPQ. But there are some distinct differences. But I really like the trigger on the VP9. I really like the balance of the gun. Really well done. The grip is well done. The magazines are well thought of. It's just a quality gun. You know, give the VP9 a pretty hard look. I was very impressed with the trigger on it. Don't care so much for the European-style mag release, you know, that little flap underneath the trigger guard that you got to depress with whatever finger you can figure out. As a matter of fact, what's interesting is I shot the gun dry, and I went to reload, and of course, because all I shoot are guns with conventional mag release buttons, I'm using my thumb on the side of the grip trying to figure out how to drop the magazine out of this thing. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, that's right. It's a European magazine release. But other than that, the H&K VP9 is fantastic. And it's a very, very comfortable gun. It's a comfortable gun. It fits well. It fits. You probably could customize it and make it fit just about any hand. What I like is not only can you put different size back straps, but you can put, I'm pretty sure you can put different palm swells on it and make the grip wider or narrower. And that's really cool too. So it's so customizable, and I understand it's a little bit of a problem finding magazines for it. So that's one thing I would caution you is if you're going to get a VP9, try to gather up as many magazines as you can quickly. But I hope that H&K fixes that and makes magazines more available for that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if some of you know of a real easy way to get some VP9 magazines for the H&K 9mm VP9 pistol, please let me know. Send me an email. Put a comment up on handgunworld.com, Facebook message, whatever. You can find me on Facebook at Handgun World Podcast on Facebook. My email's bob@handgunworld.com, or drop me a voicemail, whatever. And let me know where there's a good source for VP9 magazines. Let the listeners know. I understand they're a little bit expensive, but it seems like in the gun world you pretty much get what you pay for. This is a very high-quality striker-fired gun, in my opinion, and certainly no slouch. Definitely something, you know, I mean, H&K has just done, I think they've done their homework on this gun. So again, I like to talk about guns that I've actually had a chance to shoot, even if it's just a little bit, and I was quite impressed with the H&K VP9. Now, the other thing is, I want you to remember, this is a striker-fired gun. H&K's, you know, fairly well known for their hammer-fired guns. This one's striker-fired. It's the first time, I think, since they came out with the P7 series that they've put out a striker-fired gun. So that's what I like. I like those striker-fired trigger pulls where the trigger pull is pretty much the same each time. You know, by the way, somebody sent me an email, I think it was, Because I've made comments like, I like Glock pistols and I like striker-fired guns because it's the same trigger pull each time. And somebody, you know, and I said I like them over double action, single action guns because it's the same trigger pull each time, where a double action, single action is not. And somebody said, hey, Bob, you know, it's having a Glock is really not the same trigger pull each time because you have a lot of take up in that trigger. And so on that first shot, you got a lot of take up, whereas if you shoot to reset, you don't really have that much take up. And while I see their point, I really have to respectfully disagree, and I do not believe that that's the same thing. Here's why. The take-up on a Glock pistol or an XD or an M&P, it's very, very light. I mean, it's when you start to practice with these striker-fired guns and you get really good at it, you don't even notice the take-up. But it's not the same as a really long, double-action, very hard trigger pull on a double-action, single-action gun. Now, recently Ben Branham over at the Modern Self-Protection Podcast had the SIG armorer on, a gentleman from the Dallas-Fort Worth area who's a very, very good SIG armorer, and he was really extolling the virtues of the double-action, single-action trigger. It can be a really nice system if you want to get used to it. But to the people who say that shooting a Glock or a M&P or an XD is the same as shooting a double-action, single-action, I don't think so. Just because it has a long take-up in that trigger doesn't mean that it's the same pull weight during that take-up. And so it's a vastly different, sure felt like it to me anyway, like a vastly different trigger pull with a double-action, single-action gun. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, the first trigger pull is a fairly long and fairly heavy double-action trigger, and then after that, you have a single action. I also like, by the way, on this H&K VP9, I really like the mag release. I'm sorry. I don't like the mag release. The slide release. I really like that. It's very well positioned. This gun pretty much is going to fit just about anybody's hand. I also like the magazine well cutouts at the bottom of it. If you Google the H&K VP9 and take a look at a picture of it, now I'll do that for you. I'll put it in the show notes. That there's some magwell cutouts. In other words, what that means is at the bottom of the magwell, you can just basically see that on both sides the magazine well is cut out. And what that does is it helps you rip that magazine out with a lot more efficiency. If you've got a malfunction where a typical tap, rack, and bang does not clear the weapon, you got to do a lot more than that. You got to lock that slide back. You got to rip that magazine out because chances are that's where your problem is. You got a double feed, misfeed, whatever, and you got to rip that magazine out. You got to get part of that jam out of there. You're also going to have to run the slide several times and then insert a fresh magazine. But you know, it's really important to be able to have a lot of leverage to get that magazine out of there, especially if it's stuck in there, and that can happen. So H&K has done a real good design with the magazine well cutouts at the bottom of the magazine, and I'm very impressed with that. And that's part of the malfunctions that any good trainer is going to teach you, some good malfunction manipulation, and you will appreciate a gun with magazine well cutouts. Neither of my Glocks have that, neither do the M&Ps, and that's actually something that I'm thinking about having modified on the grip of my Glocks and my M&Ps, but H&K has already done that. So very good on them. The accuracy on that gun seemed fantastic. And again, a lot of it has to do with a good, very well done trigger. Do I want this gun? Yeah, I want this gun. You know, is that magazine release lever on the trigger guard European style, is that a deal breaker for me? No, it's really something I don't like. I wish they did what Walther did with the PPQ M2. The PPQ M2 has got the, I call it the American style, push button mag release on, and I'm pretty sure that that's ambidextrous too. That's what I wish that VP9 had on here. However, this gun is not priced like most H&Ks. You know, somewhere in the neighborhood of like $650 to $699, something like that. So not a whole lot much more than buying a Glock or an M&P or an XD, and I really think that you get a really nice gun for it. So once again, Matt, thank you for letting me shoot your gun. Seems like a really neat gun, the H&K VP9. And every time I look at these guns that are mostly full-size, because it is, the H&K VP9 is mostly a full-size, duty weapon-size gun. Every time I look at one of these, I say, wow, I wish they had this in a compact version. I wish Walther had the PPQ, just like a PPQ, only a little bit smaller, like Glock 19 size or Smith & Wesson M&P9 size. But they don't. I wish that H&K made this VP9 in a compact version, because let's see here, I'm looking at some specs on this, and it's not huge by any stretch of the imagination. It's a 4.09-inch barrel. Sound familiar? That's the same barrel length as a Glock 19. The weight of it is a little heavy. Loaded, it's 32 ounces, 26 ounces with an empty mag. You know, the sight radius seems to be a little bit longer. Yeah, you know, actually kind of analyzing this, 15 plus 1 capacity, I guess it really isn't too much bigger than a Glock 19. It is bigger than a Glock 19, but not that much. I guess what I'm wishing is they would have more like a Glock 26 version with a little bit longer grip than the Glock 26. You know how when you have a Glock 26 or a Smith & Wesson M&P 9? I guess that's what I'm looking for. Like an M&P 9 compact. I wish they had an H&K VP9 about that same size. That's kind of like my perfect size. A G19, an M&P 9 compact, yeah, that's kind of like that's my perfect size, at least for my hands and for the type of shooting I like to do and for concealed carry. That's kind of like my perfect size. But the VP9 could be doable. You know, open carry is coming to Texas. Well, hopefully I didn't jinx the process by doing that. It looks fairly certain that open carry is coming to Texas. But you know how it is with knucklehead politicians. You never know. Supposedly the Texas Senate was on Monday put the finishing touches on the Texas open carry bill, and there's supposed to be a full vote on it very soon, and then it's supposed to head straight to the governor's desk for signature. So I would say there's an extremely, extremely likely possibility that we're going to have open carry in Texas. I think this would kind of be a really good open carry gun if you are in an open carry state. What I like about it is it's still probably pretty fast out of the holster. I did not get to draw this gun because basically the student took it out of his holster and handed it to me and said, here, shoot it. I didn't get to draw it out of the holster, but the two students who were using it seemed like they were able to do a pretty good job of getting that out of the holster quickly. But it might be a really good open carry gun. Get yourself a good retention holster and get a H&K VP9. I'm kind of dropping a hint there. Maybe I'll get it. Of course, I'm not going to be open carrying, but what I really like and what I'm really looking forward to, and matter of fact, I had a chance to read a summary of the open carry bill, and if it passes the way it is, basically it says if all or part of your gun shows it, that's considered open carry. So that's fine. So if it's legal, hey, great. It'll be great to be able to carry larger size guns and not have to worry about them printing, even if I do decide to conceal it. And hey, if I change my mind, which I do reserve the right to do once in a while, change my mind, especially when I take a good hard look at something, yeah, you never know. Maybe I will open carry. Now, speaking of carrying, this is what I want to say. Paul Lathrop and Ben Branham and I went to lunch on Monday after we taught the class up there in South Dakota last weekend. And we kind of got into a pretty neat discussion. You're going to hear some of the discussion that we got into right here on this episode. You're not going to hear all of it, but you're going to hear some of it. You're also going to hear some other audio that I was able to obtain last weekend. But one of the discussions that Ben's probably going to play on his Modern Self-Protection podcast, maybe Paul might use the audio. We got into a discussion of concealed carrying And the fact that, you know, we shouldn't have to be asking permission from the government, which we do. And I support that. I want you guys to know. I support the fact, and I've said this a long time. If you go back and listen to some of my older shows, I hope some of you go back and listen to some of my older shows. I said for a very long time that I think it's not constitutional to have to get a license to carry a gun. That it's not constitutional. Now, in the past, I've had the opinion that training should be required, but I've reversed myself on that. Training should not be required, because I don't like the government requiring much of anything, to be honest with you. You know, the government can't seem to do much right at all. But the subject was brought up that in states that allow open carry, that it hasn't been a problem. And that's true, it hasn't been a problem. States that allow concealed carry hasn't been a problem. Concealed carry holders, gun carriers in general just don't commit very many crimes. Licensed gun carriers, you know, people that have been background checked, and primarily background checked, they just simply don't commit very many crimes. It's not been much of a problem. But you do have to be very careful when you use that argument. And you might not agree with me on this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway, because it's how I feel right now. Just because something isn't a problem, you have to look a little deeper. And you have to understand why something is not a problem. Because the subject of driving came up in that conversation. I brought it up. And, you know, how would you like it if we removed the driver's license requirement and the training requirement? Now, I know. Driving's not a right. Driving is a privilege. But just think about it. The drivers are bad enough anyway, right? What if we just started handing driver's licenses out once someone becomes 16 years of age? What if all they do is just fill out a piece of paperwork, pay $15, $20, and get their driver's license in the mail with no training whatsoever? What do you think? I think the whole driving situation would worsen. I really do. I think it'd be significantly worse. It's bad enough. It's horrible. But this is one reason why we don't have a lot of problems with people that are licensed and carrying guns. And even in constitutional carry states. Because, I mean, a lot of people in constitutional carry states say, well, it's not a problem here. We have constitutional carry, and it's not a problem. And I get that. It's probably not a problem. In fact, the statistics show that it's not. Arizona, Alaska, Kansas, Vermont, I think, Wyoming. There are some constitutional carry states where it's not a problem. Kansas is actually one of the new ones, so there's not that much data to go by. But here's the thing. Not very many people carry a gun. That's what you have to understand. The percentage of the population of the United States that actually carries a gun, that actually carry, is extremely small. Let me share this with you. Okay, this comes from John Lott. You got to love John Lott. Okay, this is Crime Prevention Research Center. The Crime Prevention Research Center. John Lott, Jr., president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. I am going to link to an article that you can read. It's an awesome one. You know, he's a gun-carrying statistics guru. Here's what he says right in the very beginning, in the summary of this article. Americans that hold concealed carry permits represents 4.8% of the total population. Did you know that? Think about that. Wow, 4.8%. 11 million, slightly over 11 million Americans currently have concealed carry permits, which is about 4.8% of the population. Okay, and this was published June of 2014. So it's not very old data. 4.8%. Well, think about it. If we only have 4.8% of Americans carrying guns, that means over 95% don't do it. Now, think about it. These are Americans that have concealed carry permits. You and I both know that not everybody that has a concealed carry permit actually carries and carries every day. Right? Do you know somebody like that? I know lots of people like that. I know some people that have been through my Texas CHL course. I've taught two of them. I know people who have been through my CHL course that I personally trained and signed off on their form for them to get their Texas CHL, and they don't carry regularly. I quit teaching the Texas CHL, by the way. I don't want to teach it anymore. Various reasons, and I'll share that with you later on down the road. So, first of all, if only 4.8% of the population has a license to carry, you know that far less actually carry. I'll bet you that under 2% of the population carries. And even that's being generous, because that would be almost 50% of people that have their license actually carry. Tell me something. Do you really think that 50% of the people that actually have their license actually carry a gun? I don't even think it's quite that high. But for argument purposes, let's say there's about 2% of the population carrying a gun. 2 out of 100. That's not very many people doing something. Okay? And by the way, that's the total population. So you know that a very large segment of our population are not eligible to carry because they're not of age. Or they have a felony conviction and can't get a license. All right? So, of the people that are actually eligible to carry, maybe 2 or 3% of... of the people who can actually get a license, it's such a small number, and then not very many of them carry. But here's where I'm going. Here's my argument. Let's say every person of the 11,113,000 Americans that have a concealed carry permit, let's say every one of them carried every day. That's only 4.8% of the people carrying. What do I mean by that? Not many people are doing it. So when you say, hey, you know what? It's not much of a problem. Well, it's not much of a problem because not very many people do it. Everybody drives a car. Everybody. I mean, how many people that are eligible to drive a car don't drive a car? And then, of course, there are people who really shouldn't be driving a car, driving cars. But that's a whole other story. Especially in South Texas. We see a lot of those people that shouldn't have a driver's license that do somehow. Imagine that. Wonder how they got a driver's license. But I'm just saying, please be careful with the argument. I read that all the time. I hear that all the time. I see that all the time. If gun carrying was something that everybody did, then you could say, well, there's not much of a problem. And you know what? If as many people carried guns as were driving, let's say, and it wasn't a problem, then I think you could probably really make the case, hey, you know what? Carrying a gun's not a problem. And it's not a problem here in our state. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have everybody carrying. We should. Every able-bodied American that's 21 years of age and not a convicted felon should be carrying a firearm. That would be really nice. Here's the problem. A lot of those people did not grow up around guns. They didn't grow up in the gun culture. They've never had anybody train them in being responsible. I'll say that again. They're not used to being around firearms. They've never had anybody train them to be responsible. Hey, when I was a kid, I was around guns all the time. All the time. When I was a kid growing up in northeastern Wisconsin, I was around guns all the time. Concealed carry wasn't even allowed then. Concealed carry of handguns wasn't allowed. But we all grew up around firearms, mostly long guns. And there's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, and you grew up around guns all the time, and you had your parents train you. Let's face it, there aren't very many parents right now that are training their young people to shoot and be safe with firearms. I know that you probably are. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably the kind of person that does. And maybe you grew up around guns and your parents trained you, but it's getting to be a smaller and smaller percentage. I wish it would become a larger and larger percentage. So this is why I'm such a big fan of training. This is why I will stop short in saying that training should be required. I won't say that. But it's one reason why I am such a big proponent of training, because as the number of people that carry guns grows, as the number of people get larger, it could be a problem if people are not responsible. Yes, they have to take personal responsibility. I know most of you say, well, it's a person's personal responsibility. Come on. You and I both know there's a lot of very irresponsible knuckleheads out there in everything that they do. So the fact of the matter is not everybody's going to be responsible. But right now we got a very, very, very small percentage of people carrying guns. Here's what I wish. This is what I really wish. I wish that the figure was the other way around. Instead of 4.8% of the population that carry guns or have permits, I wish it was 4.8% that don't carry a gun. That's what I wish it was. I wish the other 95.2% did carry guns, and that we had this massive gun-carrying public of people that are responsible, getting training, at least with the responsibility of carrying a gun. Even if all they did was just go sit for 4 to 6 hours and learn safety. Oh, well, I guess that's what they're supposed to be able to do when they get their concealed carry license. But that's only 4.8% of the people. So I'll quit repeating myself. But that's what I wish, is that I wish we had the large percentages of people that were carrying guns. And then I think you would probably see people would say, you know what, we have to be responsible with these things. Because if we're not responsible with these things, it's going to cause some very, very serious problems. Think about that. Now, some other numbers from this article that I thought was really interesting. Florida has the most concealed carry permits issued, according to John Lott's article, 1.28 million. 1.28 million in Florida. And again, the date of this article is July 9th, 2014. July 9th, 2014. So it's not that old. But I'm pretty sure these are active licenses. He probably figured out, you know, he probably is only using the number for active licenses. Some of them have lapsed. Very few have been revoked. States just don't revoke concealed handgun licenses very often because they don't need to, right? They don't need to because people who are licensed to carry a gun are not the bad guys. So why should the state have to revoke licenses? Think about that. Texas is number two on the list with 708,000 people, or 708,000 active licenses. Remember, that's not 708,000 people carrying, because you and I know good and darn well that not all of those 708,000 people are carrying on a regular basis. I thought that Texas was tops, but it's not. It's Florida. So I will link in the article. I want you to go look at that article, and I want you to read it. And there's a lot of numbers in it, and there's a lot of statistics in it. But it really is some interesting reading. You got to check it out. Now, another thing that I thought that was interesting in this article is the percentage of the adults that have a license to carry per state. In other words, which state has the largest percentage of the adult population with a permit? And the state we just left the home of Paul Lathrop and the Polite Society podcast, where we just taught a fantastic training program. South Dakota has 12% of the population has a concealed carry permit. And bringing up the rear is, let me scroll down this list, Hawaii, 0.2%. Hawaii and New Jersey, 0.2% have a concealed carry permit. I guess I'm not going to really comment any more about that. So let's take a quick break, and I'll be back.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, next up on the traveling schedule, Ben Branham and I are going up to Squim, Washington on the Olympic Peninsula once again to get together with Glenn Tate, the author of the book series 299 Days, and a couple of members of his team. And we are going to put on a two-day class this time, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. We're going to get into some more information, or actually some more techniques. It's the same course we just did up in South Dakota. And folks, even those of you who came last year for the one day, this year you're going to get so much more out of the two-day. Glenn's going to be there both days. Fort Discovery is a cool place. There's a wonderful bunkhouse at the range. The bunkhouse has room for up to 13 people, plus Ben and I, and we're getting close. I think we've only got 4 spots left for the bunkhouse accommodations. You can still come to the class if you want, but if the bunkhouse is sold out, then you'll have to get your own lodging arrangements. But it is just, you got to go to FortDiscoveryUSA.com and check it out. That's FortDiscoveryUSA.com. We're going to Ohio in September. That's going pretty well right now. Ohio in September, not too far from the Canton area. Same thing, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. And then the advanced course, level 2 in San Antonio. Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast and Tracy Thrunberg, a Mag 40 staff instructor and an instructor at KRT Training. They are going to get together with Ben and I, and we're going to do the advanced level 2. All of you Beyond Concealed Carry graduates, mainly in the state of Texas, if you've been through our course, or if you've been through another course that's a real good course, and we can verify that you've been trained somewhere else as well, come on down. Come on down to San Antonio the weekend before Thanksgiving. It ought to prove to be some pretty nice weather. And that's going to be 2 days, Saturday and Sunday before Thanksgiving. All the details can be found at handgunworld.com. Okay, well, I'm here with Randy. Randy's one of our students at Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced up here in South Dakota. Randy, thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob. It's been a great time today.
Well, thank you. So tell me about the first day. How's it been? What did you learn? What are your takeaways?
Well, I'm a little bit tired. It's been an awfully long day of shooting. We managed to throw a lot of lead downrange, and some of the takeaways for me today was, I'm probably one of your older students. And here I thought that I had a pretty fair experience base coming to this today, but I realized that I still got a lot to learn. And some of the things that I really enjoyed today was just learning that I really can hit the target while moving. And that was a challenge.
Without completely using your sights.
True. Yeah. When you first said today that by the end of the day we'll learn how to shoot without using our sights and just learn to instinctively hit the target and hit the target very well, you know, I just didn't know if I believed you or not. But now after doing it all day, it's, you know, now it's almost second nature.
And tomorrow you got another day.
Oh, I know it. I don't know if I can handle that. We're going to rest up big time tonight.
Yeah, take some ibuprofen, get some good sleep, rest up, because we're going to ratchet up the intensity a little bit tomorrow. And good. So what was your favorite part?
I think my favorite part was shooting on the move, actually, because it's something that I hadn't really done before to any degree. I think we've all shot at the ranges and we've all, you know, shot stationary targets, but it's a whole different challenge when you're actually moving. A little bit more what a real life situation might actually be like.
Yeah, and you're shooting your XDM.
Yes, I got a Springfield XDM 9mm.
XDM 9mm. Yeah, you're doing pretty well with it. So, and your wife is here with you.
Yes, my wife is here with me. She's shooting her Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum, although she is taking it easy on us guys today, and she's just shooting 38 specials and giving us an opportunity to look good.
It's a Smith & Wesson Model 66, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I got it. That was her Christmas present.
That's a great Christmas present. Yeah. She is taking it easy on us. I heard she was whispering, telling me that tomorrow she's going to bury us.
Well, that's what she says. But you know, herself and the other lady shooters today, they were all doing a very good job.
Yeah. So tell me what – okay, so the moving and shooting, you realize you had a lot to learn. How long you been shooting?
Well, pretty much my whole life. I'm 57. Growing up here in South Dakota, everybody grows up around firearms. Probably didn't do much with handguns until I was in the military. Then I was in the United States Navy for 6 years. Got some exposure to that. Once I got out, I really didn't do much with them until all my kids grew up. And then probably picked it up again here about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Okay. Good. So, what do you tell me? What you kind of give me an idea of what you hope to get out of tomorrow?
Well, one of the biggest thing I'm after is just you know, safety with a handgun while doing real life shooting scenarios. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to do well on a range in a very controlled situation. It's a whole different story I've learned when I have to quickly get my coat out of the way of the firearm. Or if, you know, there's other people around that you have to watch for. And, you know, just having a live firearm on your belt, you know, gives you a whole nother level of respect.
Mm-hmm. And there's other things you have to be aware of, too.
Yes, there is.
It's not something you can just take lightly.
No, it is not. So I've always been, or like to think I was, you know, a real safety-conscious person. But this does, you know, train me up to a new level there, too.
Good, good. Stay right here for a minute, Randy. Jerry, come on over.
Yeah.
Okay, here with another student, Jerry.
How was your first day?
Oh, it's fantastic. I'm amazed at the stuff I didn't know.
Like what?
The just being smooth, you know, whatever I do reloads, normally I wouldn't, you know, pull my hands up to where I can see what I'm doing. I'd always have them down by my waist, and it works better, you know, if you see what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and we emphasized body mechanics today.
Yes.
You know, doing things that are much more natural for your body to do. And that also give you the advantage in a fight.
Oh, yes.
Did you take away some of that?
Oh, definitely. You know, the whole, like you said, you know, point your body where you want to move and shoot whichever direction you need to shoot. And, you know, don't worry about trying to mimic this walk or that walk. Just walk.
Yeah.
Just move, like you normally move.
Just like you normally do. How long have you been shooting, Jerry?
First time I ever really shot was, I guess I was like 12 or so, you know, with a, you know, old school wheel gun, 22, and, you know, put a couple of rounds in. And then the next time was I was 18, I bought a shotgun and learned to hunt and kind of been going since. I've never really got into the handguns till about 15 years ago, and then it was mainly more for sport than anything.
Yeah.
you know, to where now it's more of a, gone to more of a defensive aspect.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm used to going to the square ranges and just point and shoot, point and shoot, point and shoot. And this just opens it all up to what you actually can do.
Well, yeah, what you can do with a handgun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Randy, I think you answered it before. How long have you been shooting handguns?
Quite a bit, probably just the last year and a half, 2 years at the most.
Okay.
I've been exposed to it my whole life, did some shooting early on, but never took it seriously, never did any range shooting, never had any training.
Any? So I was just going to ask you, any other training classes besides this one?
Nope.
Wow. So you get to start with me and Ben?
Training, yep.
You're probably going
go
home
right
tomorrow.
To the best right off the bat.
Thank you. Now you're going to go home tomorrow and go, I'm never going to train again, right? Jerry, how about you? Any other training?
I had some with a company called ZERT, the Zombie Eradication Response Team, but that was more of a... rifle-oriented and more of a military style. You know, like, you know, groups of four or five guys working, like, as a team. You know, the moving and shooting and, okay, you know, I'm the last guy. I got to let this guy know I'm the last guy moving. That kind of thing, whereas this is more of an individual handgun, a specific, this is what needs to be done and let's do it.
Yeah.
But other than that, no real formal training other than common sense. You know, just,
and a lot of practice.
Yeah, you know, don't point it at anything you don't want to shoot. The four safety rules, you know. You follow those, and I haven't shot anyone or myself yet. So I figure I'm doing pretty good. They
yeah,
work.
You haven't shot me yet either.
No, don't want to do that. That would be bad.
I haven't seen many zombies out here either.
Yeah, not very many zombies.
It's been effective.
Well, I'm glad you brought up common sense. Unfortunately, common sense ain't so common these days.
Definitely not.
But that's good. So, anything in closing, we're going to wrap up pretty soon, though, Randy. Anything else, anybody you want to share? Anything you want to share with somebody that's maybe thinking about getting some training?
Well, I think no matter what your level of expertise is or lack thereof, there's no substitute for good training, especially good professional training from people that have been there, done that, learned the techniques. Yeah, you're just going to walk away with a higher level of confidence. You're going to know what your skills are. You're going to be a far safer shooter. And I would just highly recommend it to anybody. And even if you think that, oh, no, I don't need it, I've been shooting my whole life like I have, there's still no substitute for it.
Yeah, there is. What about you, Jerry?
More or less the same thing he said. I mean, you know, you know, like I said, I've been shooting handguns for, you know, 15-ish years, and, you know, there's stuff where it's like, okay, I didn't realize I was doing that. I guess you could technically say wrong. I mean, there is no real wrong or right, but I didn't have a better method or another method to try because it was all on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, no one's saying, here, you know, try the thumbs forward, you know, because I always used to grip, you know, like a revolver with your thumbs down and overlapping, and, you know, just over the last couple of years, I've been trying to break myself of that, and it's been working. Mm-hmm. And then this just kind of seemed to elevate that some, you know, because other people see that, hey, you know, try this. You know, like Ben was saying, okay, you know, smooth out your rhythm more while you're shooting, you know, space them out instead of bap, 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 you know, try and even it out like a metronome.
Mm-hmm.
And things just smooth out, and it worked.
Yeah, it does. Well, tell me this, guys, why should somebody that owns a gun and they conceal carry or they're open carriers like you guys here in South Dakota, and they, you know, they exercise their Second Amendment right, which is protected by the Constitution. They can they have the right to own and carry and bear arms. But why should they take it to the next level? Why should they get any training at all? I mean, why shouldn't they just kind of walk around saying, okay, it's my right to have this thing, and I don't really know how to use it, but so be it.
Well, you know, maybe you're right to drive a car, too, but you still go through the training. And
you don't have a right to drive a car, but
it's probably not a good analogy.
Yeah.
But I do think that if to properly exercise your Second Amendment rights, you also have the responsibility to do it in a safe, professional, well-trained manner. And if I'm going to be out there, I want to be effective. You know, I just don't want to be a foolish handgun owner and make mistakes. It might cost me my life, too. And so that's where I've really appreciated today your personalized, hands-on training. And, again, I think everybody needs to do it.
Yeah. What about you, Jerry? What do you think?
Pretty much the same. I mean, it's you don't know what you don't know.
That's hard for some people to accept, though.
Exactly. And I came into it, you know, I mean, I said I've been messing with guns, you know, since I've been 18, you know, and, but again, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, and you can't really figure that out unless you have somebody watching you and say, hey, this isn't quite the best way. Maybe try this. It might work a little better for you. If not, then go back to what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And I say you don't know what you don't know until someone tells you you don't.
Mm-hmm. Let me get your opinion on something. All you guys that are sitting here, if you want. Because Randy mentioned that, you know, he's getting more effective by being here taking this training. One of the biggest arguments that people that don't like guns, one of the biggest arguments that the anti-gunners use is they say, well, you guys are just a bunch of bozos. You don't have training, right? What do you people know about that? I mean, you want a gun, you say it's your right and everything, and it is your right, but, you know, you don't have training like the police do. Now, that's a whole other subject. We won't go there. But you're here getting training. So do you think it's an advantage? Do you think that's also something that we can come back and say, hey, you know what? Wait a second. No, we do have training.
Yes, obviously it's a very big advantage. And if I compare it against the training that I did have in the past, in hindsight now I would say that training wasn't as effective as where I feel it really needs to be in this modern era. And that was military training. But they didn't teach me some of the skill sets that you were showing me out here. The real life stuff, when rubber meets the road, and I'm in a defensive situation, what is it that I really need to be doing? What do I need to be thinking? How do I need to be looking out for those around me? How can I be a safer owner of a handgun? And that's not only going to make it safer for me, but it's going to make it safer for my family, all my neighbors, anybody around me. If I ever am forced into one of those situations, and I hope I never am, but if that should ever happen, okay, at least now I know that I'm going to definitely have significantly improved odds now of walking away from that situation alive, and everybody else around me, except maybe the bad guy, is also going to walk out of there alive.
And you sort of take away the argument of the anti-gunners that, hey, you're not safe. You don't know what you're doing. You shouldn't have it. And only if you wear a badge, you should have a gun, right?
Well, I mean, that's, and I challenge them to come out here and take this course, too.
Exactly.
And just to see what their skill sets are.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Randy. What do you think, Jerry?
It's the big thing I got is, you know, the fact that you really don't need to look at your sights. You know?
Really?
Everybody with the point shooting is bad and all that. It's a bunch of crap, you know. I mean, to put it bluntly, because I kind of tried it before at home, you know, on the square ranges, and but until you actually have someone give you pointers on how to do it, it doesn't quite click. And now it's starting to really come into play. And you know, like the last few times we were moving from side to side, I wasn't hardly looking at the gun; I was just looking at the target. And all you saw, I was hitting.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, cool, you know. So as far as the point shooters, you know, people saying point shooting is nah.
I like the sound effects. I like the sound effects. What's your takeaways?
Well, you know, Bob, I think that the big thing here is, you know, you talked about why we should get training. And it's the cheesy quote from Spider-Man, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. We have this right, this inherent God-given right to defend ourselves.
That's right.
And we have this means of carrying a weapon with us everywhere we go. But if we don't train with it, if we don't learn what we need to do to be effective with it, you know, as Randy said earlier, you know, we're really shortchanging ourselves and honestly our loved ones that are around us. You know, the training is unique. It's unique to those who choose to carry and defend, you know, ourselves and our loved ones.
So what's one of your takeaways from today?
You know, really moving and shooting. I think too often we get out, we train, we stand, we square up to the target, you know, we pick our gun up off the bench and we plug some rounds. And we might be lucky enough to get to a range where they let us draw from a holster. But we're not out there, we're not moving, we're not being engaged in really what I would say is more a real-life scenario where we have a threat and we have to react to that, we have to move. And, you know, without necessarily focusing on the sights, we can put effective hits on that target and do it consistently. Yeah. That's my takeaway.
You know, and it's interesting because, I mean, all three of you guys are pretty much saying the same thing. You know, this wasn't set up. This is a very impromptu interview, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Right? None of you guys were briefed or told what to say, but yet you're almost saying the same thing. It's
kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of scary. It's kind of cool. Good. Thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Well, no problem.
Thank you.
All right, so now Paul Lathrop's going to chime in. Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. I thought that we were done, but he's got some good things to say. Go ahead, Paul.
I'm going to flip this around a bit. You've been asking questions of the students, and I'm going to ask some questions of the trainers. You came about this as why should we get training, and the answers were pretty similar. But what I want to ask the instructors is you've seen people of every experience level here today. You've seen people that are very new shooters. You've seen some people that have been through some professional training. Have you seen, and you guys, I'm guessing, have trained in the hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen anybody that cannot be trained?
Have we seen anybody that cannot be trained? I would have to say no. I've seen some pretty difficult ones. I've seen some that... Ben's laughing over there. Ben will chime in. Well, I can specifically remember one student, of course, no names here.
I was just thinking the same one.
Yeah, I know who you're thinking of. That at the end, I was kind of scratching my head wondering if this person learned anything. However, I think they did. I think they did. But out of the hundreds, probably just that one was a challenge. Ben, what do you think?
I was thinking the same student, and it's the only ones that are a challenge, they are unteachable, are the ones that bring their ego here.
Yeah.
When they come to a class and want to show you how well they shoot, they're untrainable. We had one student that refused to listen, he couldn't make a hit, and he just thought he was the bee's knees, but everybody else, by the end of the day, like you guys, was making great hits, moving around real well, doing things, he just didn't want to listen. He thought he knew everything. He didn't want to change his grip. He didn't want to change his stance. He didn't want to try something new. And he couldn't hit the damn target to save his life. He also was the only person that's ever given us a negative review on the class.
Imagine that.
So then ego gets in the way. And I just, when your ego gets in the way, as long as you're doing something, as long as it's not unsafe, I don't care. That's why I always tell everybody, you guys heard me a couple times, check your ego. Leave it at the door. Learn what I got. If it's good, take it, use it. If it's not, you can always go back to what you already used, or you can try another class. But if you learn it, I think you'll take it and use it.
So no matter who you are, you can benefit from training as long as you check your ego at the door.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, and as long as you're willing to listen and put into practice the things that we share with you while you're here in class, you know, then yes, you can be trained.
Train guys with gimpy legs. Train guys with no leg.
Mm-hmm.
Train a guy with the broken knee or the broken leg. Remember, he had to be on the freaking...
Yeah, matter of fact, I'll use his first name. Hi, Phil. How are you, Phil? Glad you're listening, Phil. Student name.
You did better after you got off of your gimpy leg, Phil.
No, but he came to our class in crutches.
Yeah.
And he came in some kind of a brace because he had injured himself, and he was still training. It was amazing. I was incredibly impressed.
He was running across the range doing this stuff on crutches and some kind of brace thing that he was wearing.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
So everybody, I think, is trainable. They just need to try it and open their mind and try it. That's it.
Well, and I was real appreciative of your style out there, especially on the range. You didn't just tell us what to do. You explained it, but then more importantly, besides showing us, you explained how this will benefit me.
The why.
Okay.
Yes.
The reason why you hold your firearm in a certain way was this. The reason why you move like this is because of this. This is why, you know, when we say, you know, keep moving while you reload, this is the reason behind it. So it made it very easy, for me anyway, to be trainable, because it wasn't like, well, gee, why do I do that? You know, it made sense.
Good. Thanks, Randy. Paul, anything else?
I'm hungry.
Let's go eat. Let's go eat. All right, folks. Well, hey, we are at Lick the Spoon Restaurant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Cool name. I had to get on the podcast and say Lick the Spoon. I just thought that was kind of cool. So I'm with a couple of really cool guests, Paul Lathrop and Ben Branham. Ben and I just got done teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced this past weekend up here in Sioux Falls. And Paul, thank you for being such a great host. I appreciate it.
No problem. At least I can do that.
Well, you did a great job. Yeah, it was phenomenal. Everything went so smooth because of you. You did a lot of advanced work. And you were also a student in the class.
Yes, I was.
So what do you think? Tell us about it.
Well, I've been through a couple training classes before, and it's always drinking from the fire hose, and this was no exception. First part of day one was getting your basics down, and then when you guys say you're going to be moving and shooting the first day, you're not kidding. We were doing a lot of moving and shooting right off the first day. I surprised myself at how well I got moving, shooting, and keeping rounds on target. Now, how quickly you guys got me firing without my rate of fire, accurate rate of fire, went up a lot working with you guys.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. Now, I don't want this just to be a big, huge infomercial for the class, but tell me, why is it that you think that having a rate of fire that's accurate and being coming out of the holster and making that first couple hits real quickly, why is that important for an armed citizen?
One of the things I like to say is when seconds count, police are only minutes away, right? If you need help, you need help now. And if something's happening, if you need to stop something bad happening, the faster it stops, the better. And if
vanilla malt right over here.
They can tell what our food is now too. Vanilla malt, absolutely. That's good.
That's actually a good looking vanilla
That's
malt.
A good looking vanilla malt.
I had to be a little kid and get me a vanilla malt.
There you go. So anyway, so you were saying when seconds count, police are minutes away, and that's true.
And do I want to, if something bad is happening, I don't want to be fumbling around with a holster trying to get the handgun out. God forbid I don't want to be going to run to my gun safe to get the gun. You know, so even if I'm wearing it like I recommend everybody, pants on, gun on, you still want to be as quick as you can and as accurate as you can, getting the gun out, getting it into play, and if you need to use it, getting fast, accurate hits.
Good, thanks. Hey, Ben, I was telling on yesterday on Paul's show, I was telling Paul that...
Not at all.
Thank you. I was telling Paul that I was impressed with, you know, the progress that a lot of students made. Did you notice that, too?
I notice that all the time. It's a lot of fun. Paul was no exception. He made good progress throughout the class.
He did.
He started out with some decent skills, and then they just get better as you go. So, and I don't know if that's because we're awesome instructors. No, not really.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
You guys are very good instructors.
Of course it is.
When you throw 500 or 600 rounds downrange and you actually pay attention to what you're doing, it's hard not to improve.
Yeah. Paul, in case people don't know, you were training with your Glock 22.
Right.
What I mean by that is not a 22 caliber Glock. His Glock Model 22 in 40 caliber.
Right.
What ammo were you shooting?
I still don't remember the brand of it. It was bulk ammo I bought at a local...
I remember, Magtech.
There you go, Magtech.
It was Magtech, 180 grain.
Cheapest stuff I could find.
Yep. Yep.
That's normally what I do. But you had problems with your Glock.
I had failure to...
No!
I did.
It never happened.
My Glock was not perfect. Number one, it needed a cleaning. It had been several hundred rounds since it had been cleaned. But we did that at the beginning of day two. We stripped it down and got and cleaned it out. But the I had some ammunition issues, and I had some issues where you guys in your training, we reloaded in the holster. And it's something I'm not used to. And there were a couple, three times when I didn't get the magazine entirely seated, come up out of the holster, one shot goes off great, and the magazine pulls out the bottom of the gun. So
got to make sure you press hard till you hear that nice positive click on Glock. You get a nice positive click. And you know what I like to do? Even when I get that little click, I like to give it another good smack. Just to make sure it's seated pretty well.
That was funny, the one time you threw your magazine downrange after firing around. Because you had the full sweep as it came out of the holster. You came real fast, and yeah, that magazine went poof.
Yep. I think it got a couple yards up downrange.
If nothing else, hit him with your magazine.
And then I had a one, I had a magazine issue, not a magazine issue, something wasn't working right. And it was one of the first times you guys said, well, just go ahead and, you know, put whatever you feel like into the target, you know, four or five, and then one to the head. Well, I had an issue. First shot went off, then it didn't, and then I had tap rack. That didn't work. Went to the backup magazine. First round didn't go. Went to my second backup magazine. That started working, and I just dumped the thing.
Well, that was funny. Actually, that wasn't to pick on you, Paul. That was to get everybody, you know, before you came to the class, you probably never had a malfunction in your Glock 22. It ran flawlessly.
I have never had them. It had never had a problem.
So we caused your first couple of malfunctions.
Maybe when I go shooting now, I can go back to, now that you guys are taking off today,
yeah,
I'll go back and
flawlessly.
My Glock will work flawlessly.
Well, but you know, this is one of the reasons why, and I talk about this a lot, you know, when you come to a class like this, you put not only yourself under stress, but you put your gear under stress, and you test what it can do. And the combination of you as a shooter being under pressure, mm-hmm. and maybe forgetting to do something, you combine that with really putting your gear to work. And that's what a lot of people don't do, combination.
I wasn't picking on you. It's just everybody thinks their gear and gun works flawlessly. And then yesterday at the end of class, I was asking people, so how many had a malfunction? Everybody raised their hand. And I had to press a little bit for a couple. They're like, no, my gun didn't malfunction. How many times did you malfunction? But if it was a gun or a person, every single one of them did it.
Right.
So in a two-day course, you're going to have a malfunction.
Well, and I think it's important that people do have malfunctions. I didn't mind when my gun started messing up a little bit. I didn't mind because if something happens, there's a little bit of stress out there. There's a lot of stress if something bad happens. I want to get good at correcting what's wrong.
Exactly. Good. And that's what it was all about. Guys, thanks. Let's eat lunch. And Paul, thank you again for being such a great host. And we'll probably be back up here doing the level 2 class. And let's eat.
Sure.
Well, once again, many thanks to Paul Lathrop. He was a terrific host. Paul, man, I tell you what, you sure know how to host a class. The range was fantastic. The service was fantastic. Lunch brought into the range was awesome. Good job getting the targets. Paul actually built some target stands for us. Because we needed some extras above and beyond what he could get a hold of. So, man, I'm telling you what, we're going to do this class again. And Paul, I've got some things in mind for you as a reward for being such a good host. I got some things in mind for you, but I'm not completely settled yet on what I want to do, and I'm still working on a few things. But I will be in touch, my friend. Thank you, and I know that Ben is equally appreciative of the work you did. I forgot to mention earlier in the show, if you want to voicemail me, you can send me a voicemail at 210-646-1727. That's really a good way. A lot of people have taken advantage of it. 210-646-1727. If you don't want your voicemail to be played on the air, that's perfectly okay. Just tell me that if you just want to leave me a comment or say hi or whatever. Also, Facebook. Follow me on Facebook at Handgun World Podcast. Twitter at Handgun World. Let's see, what am I forgetting? Oh, we just put a brand new video up on the Shooters Club, and we got more coming. We got more coming very, very soon. Most of the people at the class last weekend took advantage of our discount Shooters Club. You know, if you come to our class, you get a severely discounted rate on the Shooters Club. And you can renew your existing prescription for a lot less money as well. So that's one of the benefits of coming to the class. 35 videos. We've got 35 videos and 9 audios. And 35 instructional videos and 9 audios. That's 43 pieces of really good contact for $75 a year. Pieces of content, excuse me. For $75 a year,
Wow, that's less than $2 per video or audio. 35 videos. And we got more. Our goal is to get that up actually pretty quick. Our goal is to get that up to 60 to 70 videos, and then pretty soon 100 different videos. Ben and I have some pretty cool things planned for the Shooters Club. It's incredibly educational. If $75 a month is too hard for you to afford, $8 a month, we have an option where you can invest only $8 a month. Just go to handgunworld.com. Find the Shooters Club page or go to shootersclubmembers.com. That's shootersclubmembers.com. And as always, if you want to support me and don't want to spend any extra money right now, buy your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store link, and use that every time. Every time you make your purchases, and you're going to help support the Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. It happened to me, by the way, at the class. I was expecting a bang, and all I heard was a click. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. Intro and outro music by Ozark Revival at www.ozarkrevival.com.